here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Tom Bombadil and the One Ring, a paradox that challenges everything we know about Tolkien's world. Today on Lore of the Rings, we'll break it all down. This is episode number 164, and I'm Aaron, your host and fellow Middle-earth wanderer. I received some lovely letters from fellow wanderers that I wanted to share with you. The first is from Pew Pew, who said on Spotify, quote, "This is a great podcast that has helped me understand The Lord of the Rings so much better. I'm honored by your notes, and I appreciate the opportunity to explore Middle-earth with you." And second, from Dave Z, quote, "I listen to Lord of the Rings almost every day, and it is awesome. Well, I'll say that I'm humbled by the idea of my voice being in your head nearly every day, but I'm glad that it's so. Thank you to both of you for your notes. Those were left on Spotify Q&As a few days ago, and I'm glad to have shared them with the Wandering Company here on the show. And if you, yeah, you, who is wandering Middle-earth right now, if you would like to drop me a note, you can send me a DM on Instagram, shoot me an email, or contact me on the show's website, ringspodcast.com. I would love to hear from you, and especially if you have feedback for the show. Now, let's wander. My teenage daughter listened to the previous episode, and even though she read Fellowship years ago, she asked me, "Who is Tom Bombadil?" So let's do a map check. I like to check the map with you so we understand the context for today's wandering. It is the third age of Middle-earth. We've been following Frodo and friends as they leave the Shire, traveling through the Old Forest on their way to Bree. They have found refuge in the house of an interesting character, Tom Bombadil. Tom is a major character for particular points in the book, but is not in Peter Jackson's films. He helps the hobbits in several ways, but even Tolkien said that he would permit a film adaptation that doesn't include Tom. Tom is an interesting character because he doesn't fit neatly into any box. Is he a man or an elf? Neither, nor a dwarf. Is he a member of the Maiar? The Maiar are a class of spiritual beings who serve the demigods of Middle-earth, the Valar. Oh, the Valar, maybe he's one of those. But the truth is, we have no definitive answer about who Tom is. But even that might be the wrong question. As Tolkien admitted in one of his letters, quote, "Frodo has asked not, what is Tom Bombadil, but who is he?" We and he, no doubt, often laxly confuse the questions. No matter what question you ask, Tom remains a mystery. So we've been exploring the question of who is Tom Bombadil by a close reading of these chapters in Fellowship of the Ring. Today is our fourth and final episode on the chapter called In the House of Tom Bombadil. Now, lest we think that Tom is an isolationist kind of a hermit, we learn that he has some connections to the outside world. For one, Tom is friends with Farmer Maggot, whom he compliments by saying, quote, "There's earth under his old feet, and clay on his fingers, wisdom in his bones, and both his eyes are open." I can't help but think that this is the highest compliment that Tom could give anyone. Given that Tom is the personification of nature, it's only right for someone who respects the earth and cultivates the natural world around him, and who has dirt under his fingernails, to receive the highest praise from Tom. Beyond Farmer Maggot, Tom also has connections with the elves, for, quote, "news had reached him from Gildor concerning the flight of Frodo." As a reminder, Tom did mention that he was waiting for Frodo on the first night in Tom's house, but I find in this nearly thrown away line a little clue as to who Tom Bombadil is. Let's turn back a few pages to the chapter Three is Company. In this chapter, Frodo had met the elf Gildor, and before they parted, Gildor promised Frodo, quote, "We will send our messages through the lands. Those that have power for good shall be on watch." Listen to episode 151 for a refresher on Gildor's blessing to Frodo. So let's put these together. Those who have power for good will hear Gildor's message and be on the watch for Frodo. And Tom had been waiting for Frodo, should he pass that way. There's no way that Farmer Maggot could have notified Tom. There's simply no time nor mention of it. Therefore, Tom is a being who has power for good. Now, that's not a definitive proof that Tom is altogether good, As we've explored in the previous episode, he and Goldberry are a blending of opposites. But at least he has power for good, and that's enough for me for now. You know what else would be good? For you to leave a review and 5-star rating for this show. Leaving a rating costs you nothing and takes less than 5 seconds. But when you leave a rating or review, it helps so many fellow fans find the Lord of the Rings show, and to wander Middle-earth with you and I. So whip out that phone and tap that 5-star rating. We now shift to the final scenes of the chapter. I'll be honest, I've been wrestling with what to say about these scenes, because the major question is no longer who is Tom Bombadil, but why? Let's take a look at the two tricks that close out the chapter. The first trick is from Tom. After 2 days of housing the hobbits, Tom finally cuts to the crux of the quest. He asks for Frodo to show him the ring. Now, a lot happens here, so let's break it down. First, notice how Tom describes the ring. Quote, precious. Even casual fans of The Lord of the Rings who have only seen the films get that reference. The ring is often described as precious, and in particular by Gollum. In fact, when the current bearer of the ring starts to refer to it as precious, that's a tall tale sign that the ring is taking hold of the bearer. So, does the ring have some power or influence that it can exert over Tom Bombadil? Maybe. But I think it more likely and fitting with Tom's character that he uses the word precious in a jovial, mocking sort of a way. Frodo hands over the ring without hesitation, which is a remarkable reaction. Tom takes the ring and inverts a common motif. Putting the ring to his eye, the hobbits are both amused and alarmed by the sight of, quote, his bright blue eye gleaming through the circle of gold. Let's pause on this for a second. Remember the blending theme from the previous episode? Tom is a blending of opposites, and sometimes that theme manifests itself in the inversion of motifs. The symbol for Sauron in The Lord of the Rings is a single red eye. Yet here is the One Ring, the Master Ring, Sauron's great ring of power, symbol for domination, desire, and power. Yet in Tom's house, it becomes the punchline for a joke. Instead of the all-seeing red eye of Sauron, Tom's clear, bright blue eye pierces through the golden band. In this playful yet profound moment, Tolkien masterfully subverts expectations. The very object that epitomizes darkness and corruption is rendered harmless and almost comical in Tom's hands. This scene not only reinforces Tom's unique immunity to the ring's power, but also highlights his role as a guardian of the natural world, standing in stark contrast to Sauron's malevolent influence. This idea is further reinforced in the physical size of the ring. When Frodo hands it to Tom, the ring seems to grow in size, as if it's flexing, trying to show off how great it was, in anticipation of a fight. But when Tom puts on the ring fits only on the end of his little finger. The ring has no power to physically overcome Tom. It can't even fit properly on the smallest of his fingers. It's rather silly, really, the way the ring puffed itself up before, and now it seems rather subdued, simply by being handled by Tom. And it takes the hobbits a moment to realize the obvious. Tom is wearing the ring, and yet he is still visible to them. He has not disappeared. That is a direct contradiction to the powers of the ring, which, as we were told in the revised version of The Hobbit, when Bilbo originally found the ring, quote, if you slipped that ring on your finger, you were invisible. Only in the full sunlight could you be seen, and then only by your shadow, and that would be shaky and faint. This effect of the Ring of Power clearly has zero influence on Tom. Again, Tom has taken the basic functions of the ring and subdued them. Instead of Tom disappearing, though, something does disappear. The ring itself. With a laugh, Tom makes the ring disappear, as if he were a common parlor magician, or we might say, a conjurer of cheap tricks. To complete the flourish, a flash accompanies the ring's disappearance, much like Bilbo's disappearance on the night of the long-expected party in Chapter 1. Frodo is alarmed, but again in a blending of opposites, Tom smiles and hands the ring back to Frodo. Now, your mind is likely spinning right now with a single question. Why does the ring have no power over Tom Bombadil? We've seen others, and we will see even more, who struggle with just the idea of being in proximity of the ring. The lust for power is too much for them. Even Gandalf knows that he can't bear the ring, He fears its power too much. So why is Tom so outside of these concerns? Why is he so apart from the attraction of the ring? Well, I want to get to that, but before I do, we need to wander into the second trick of the night, Frodo's test. Frodo, it seems, wants to make sure that the ring that Tom gave him is indeed the one ring he has been charged with carrying. The first thing I find interesting about this is what is the source of Frodo's suspicion? Sure, Tom didn't seem to take it seriously, but there's no indication that Tom wanted to steal or exchange the ring. Indeed, Tom doesn't need a golden trinket. He has lilies to bring to his Goldberry. The suspicion and distrust comes from the ring itself, or Frodo's own attraction to the Ring of Power. So he feels, quote, something prompting him to make sure he really has the One Ring. We should know by now that that something is likely the One Ring itself, exerting its own will on Frodo. It wants to control him. And so a deceptive little trick forms in Frodo's mind. He slips the ring on his finger. His suspicions are swept away when it's clear that Merry can't see him. But I love the way that Tolkien describes how Frodo is feeling. Quote, Frodo was delighted, and in parentheses, in a way. He gets up and starts to walk away. But Tom can see right through him. Metaphorically, that is, because Tom can actually see Frodo clearly, saying that he, Tom, is, quote, not as blind as that yet. Frodo laughs as he takes off the ring, but Tolkien lets us know that Frodo is really, quote, trying to feel pleased. When I read that, I think of that pit in my stomach feeling when I have attempted to make a joke that just falls really flat. A quick story. At a business dinner, the man sitting next to me mentioned that he had read all of the Wheel of Time novels several times. Those novels are dense, thick tomes for truly dedicated readers. So I attempted to make a joke about the level of nerdiness, because, after all, I make a podcast about Lord of the Rings. So it was also an attempt to be slightly self-deprecating. So I said, wow, and you somehow convinced a woman to marry you? Yeah, instant regret. But I left out a key detail to this story for you. He was my boss's boss. Even now I cringe at my own joke. So I think I understand Frodo's feeling of trying to feel pleased with his little joke. But really, it was a stupid thing to do. But hey, I'm sure I'm not the only one out there. If you've made a cringeworthy joke that you tried to be pleased with, send me a note. Maybe I'll share it in a future episode. When we zoom out of these two tricks, I find a literary foil that shows the flip side of power. Who has the power in each of these tricks? In Tom's trick, he's laughing, the ring shrinks in size, common symbols for evil are flipped to be the butt of jokes. Tom is the one who has the power in that trick, but not Frodo. Immediately, the ring asserts itself again. Distrust, deceptive acts, forced laughs in a horrible situation. Frodo does not have power in his own trick. The ring is already exerting its will onto Frodo. The chapter closes with Tom giving the hobbits advice about the Borrowdowns. Two things to note here. One, if they come across a hill that seems haunted, he tells them to pass it on the west side. The west is the blessed side in Lord of the Rings. Remember that it is in the far west, in the land of Valinor, where the powers that govern Middle-earth dwell, the Valar. So passing the Barrows on the west side is a symbol for the power of good and light that comes from the west. And two, Tom teaches them a song to call for his help should they need it. But there's a deviation in that song that I find interesting. Perhaps maybe even a typo. For the last two or three episodes, I've been pounding on a pattern that shows up so many times in this chapter. Tom is master of wood, water, and hill. We've seen that sequence in so many places, from the songs that are sung to even the dreams of the hobbits. But note the second line of Tom's song, quote, by water, wood, and hill, by reed and willow. Did you note the pattern change? Water is mentioned first, instead of its customary second place. Was that deliberate? Maybe, seeing as how this entire chapter has been filled with symbols and references to water, including the rainy washing day of Goldberry the River Daughter. But I'm more inclined to think, since we've seen that pattern so many times in that specific order, that this line is perhaps an error, something that the editor didn't catch. Regardless, the pattern still holds, and I even have one or two more instances of it to show you in the future. But I still haven't provided an answer to that perplexing question. Why doesn't the One Ring have any power over Tom Bombadil? We'll get to that right after this break.
We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
You understand by now that Tom Bombadil is not a simple character. Tolkien himself was surprised to see Tom show up in Frodo's story, even though Tom Bombadil had been a character in various tales outside of Middle-earth that Tolkien had previously written. So if you're unsatisfied with the vague answers about who or what Tom Bombadil is, then I hate to break it to you, but you will be downright miserable with the next logical and even more complicated question. Why doesn't the ring have power over Tom Bombadil? That question has tickled the intellect of fans and scholars alike for decades and decades. Let me provide you with a high-level view of some of the popular theories that attempt to answer this question. I won't dig deep on each of these, and I'm also really curious to know which of these theories resonates the most with you. So if you have an opinion or a vote, then please send me an email or DM me on Instagram, and let's talk. Okay, high-level, cursory view of various theories. Let's go. Number one, one theory posits that Tom Bombadil exists outside the realm of power and domination, which are central themes of the One Ring. According to Tolkien's letters, Bombadil represents a being whose primary desire is understanding rather than control or possession. This makes power and domination meaningless to him, rendering the ring's influence ineffective. The idea that Tom's primary desire is understanding really resonates with me, seeing as how much he really understood about the Old Forest and the hills and the Barrowdowns and the Hobbits, the desire to understand seems to be key to knowing who Tom is. Theory number two, Tom has mastery without desire for control. Tom Bombadil is a master in a unique way. Unlike Sauron, who invests his entire being into the ring to extend his power, Tom has no such desires. He uses tools without becoming enslaved by them, contrasting sharply with Sauron's obsession with control and domination. Bombadil's lack of ambition for power means the ring cannot manipulate him. Theory number three, Tom's character is often seen as an allegory for contentment and sufficiency. He lives harmoniously with nature, taking only what he needs and enjoying life without the desire for more. This stands in stark contrast to Sauron's insatiable hunger for power and control. Bombadil's satisfaction with what he has and his disinterest in acquiring more make the ring's allure powerless over him. I will say I hesitate to use the word allegory because Tolkien was so against a direct didactic allegory in story, and even in this chapter he may have been taking a jab at C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia. The basis for Frodo's joke is that Tom is sharing a silly story about talking badgers. Instead of allegory, Tolkien was much more a fan of deep symbolism, especially as it played out in characters' actions. Theory number 4. Some scholars believe that Tom Bombadil is a nature spirit or a genius loci. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, I'm not up to date with my Latin. A spirit of a specific place. This interpretation suggests that his power is tied to the natural world and it's fundamentally different from the correcting influence of the ring. As a being deeply connected to the natural order, Bombadil is immune to the ring's corruptive power. I struggle with this one a little bit because Tom was around for the creation of the whole world, and even told the hobbits that he journeyed far and wide before settling with Goldberry at the edge of the forest. If anything, Goldberry is the localized spirit who tames Tom. Perhaps she's the reason he is immune to the ring? Number 5. Tom is simply a narrative device. Tolkien himself hinted that Tom Bombadil was included in the story as a simple narrative device to provide an adventure for the hobbits and to make a statement about the nature of power. Bombadil's immunity to the ring serves to highlight the idea that there are aspects of existence that transcend the corrupting influence of power and domination. And theory number 6, it is suggested that the ring's power is limited to those who desire what it offers: power, control, and domination. Since Bombadil has no such desires, the ring cannot affect him. This theory underscores the idea that the ring's power is not absolute, but conditional upon the desires and weaknesses of its bearer. This makes sense to me because we'll see in various other tests that the ring awakens the deepest unrealized desires of the individuals who attempt to bear it. Sam Gamgee would have ruled over a lush worldwide garden if he had used the One Ring. So there you go. These theories provide a collective contribution to understanding why the One Ring has no power over Tom. But does one or more of those sit with you? Please let me know. But the simple fact that this question brings up so many fascinating ideas makes Tom Bombadil one of the most enigmatic and fascinating characters in Tolkien's legendarium, and perhaps in all of literature. Join me in the next episode, where we will leave Tom behind and step back into the unknown and into a terrifying ghost story. Thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today. My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.